Welcome back to Practicing Catholic. Patrick Conley, glad to be with you again, along with Cami Berthium, our producer, Paul Sonic, our technical producer, coming to you through the Relevant Radio 1330 AM studios in Golden Valley. All right, next up is Sarah McCauley, who's a licensed associate marriage and family therapist at Clearwater Counseling in Woodbury. She says she loves to bake, knit, and hike, and she's kept busy with her husband and two children. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So grateful that you could be with us. Thanks for joining us. All right, so of all things that we could talk to you about, we've chosen to talk about civil disobedience. Well, you know, it's nothing. It's something I think that we're all, it's been kind of thrust into the main stage of our society and hence into our living rooms, wherever we're viewing the news. Of course, the rioting and the looting following George Floyd's death while in police custody on Memorial Day, as well as more recently, the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. There's a lot of stuff that's going on that kind of have put this front and center for us, especially here in the United States. So I guess what I want to start with is, does it exist kind of as these flash in the pan moments, or do you think that there's other contributing factors that are making this more of a cultural shift?
Well, it's a very good question, and the way I view the world and the way I understand the world is from a very systemic lens. You know, we don't exist in isolation. We exist in relationship to one another constantly. And with being in relationship, relationships aren't easy. We're always going to have discord and disagreement. The way we express them and the way things may build up can look very, very different. You know, I work a lot with couples, and I see this of, the pressure cooker moments. Mm-hmm. Of if we don't talk about it, don't talk about it, don't talk about it, it all kind of gets pushed down, built up, and explodes. You know, those couples that say they don't fight. I'm a big believer that every couple fights, not every couple fights well.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't think these are very isolated incidences, but they're bigger than they've been in a long time because there's a lot of big feelings associated with this.
Mm-hmm. And that provides an excellent tie-in, actually, with our previous guest. We were just talking about the Archdiocese and Newly Married Retreat and focusing on communication in marriage. But what about communications as a society? Kind of going on a similar question I ask of them. So what do you think, Sarah? I mean, we've got so many ways of communicating these days. Should say we have so many tools of communicating, although not necessarily, as you put it, communicating well these days in terms of getting opinions out there and these sorts of things. And yet it seems like we've experienced these recent expressions of civil disobedience. What's going on there?
Well, I think part of it ties in with it's hard to have empathy and see the humanity behind a text message or a tweet or a poster. It's hard to see the person behind the statement. And dialogue, true dialogue, comes from seeing the person as a complex being and the recognition that sometimes a conclusion or an agreement or a decision isn't black or white, that compromise and embracing our own humility of, I could be wrong, I could make confessions, maybe I haven't been thinking about this correctly, or I've been limited. Checking our own ego to engage in dialogue, human to human, two souls connecting. And a big part of it also comes, and we've seen an escalation in this for the last few decades, not helped by any part with the internet, accusation versus accountability. I think it's a really important distinction. You know, when we challenge people or we ask a question of someone, we get very defensive. And defensiveness is a roadblock to communication. You're not going to hear if you're feeling attacked. But we're also not listening if we're attacking others. The question of what kind of questions are we asking of people? How are we hearing them? And are we really listening to their answers?
Yeah, well, good questions all, especially in this this day and age when, as you say, there's a certain amount of dehumanization that goes on when we're relying on internet sources or online sources to constitute the bulk of our communication with the wider world. Well, I certainly, what you're saying is really resonating with me, but how does it turn from that into this pressure cooker that you were talking about when we're not talking about things that are upsetting us and we have the inability to recognize where we might need to change our thinking or at least check our thinking and that sort of thing? How does that translate into rioting and looting and violence and that sort of thing en masse out there on our city streets?
Well, I have a question for you to answer your question. Do you have children?
Unfortunately, no, we don't.
Okay. In parenting, we see it a lot, and even in just married relationships, that question of setting a boundary or expressing a concern and it being ignored, and to try to communicate that again, sometimes we have to get louder. You know, the difference of a child asking in a calm voice versus throwing a tantrum. And I'm not comparing the events of earlier this year to a tantrum necessarily, but that escalation of behavior in order to gain attention, that ignoring, that diffusing, that pushing away, can lead to an escalation of behavior if we don't listen in the quiet moments.
Mm.
And we see this, like I said earlier, you know, we are part of a systemic world. That system starts, you know, within the married couple, within the family life, within schools, churches, neighborhoods, and on the larger scale, you know, the statewide, nationwide, and global systems we exist in, and how that's reflective within the family structure.
Mm.
Now, if people are ignoring each other, not hearing each other, not attending, we're going to see those behaviors escalate to be heard.
Hmm.
And it stems from that lack of validation of emotional experience, that being told of your experience isn't real, it's not true.
Hmm.
Well, that dissonance of, well, what I'm experiencing is real, but what you're saying is it's not real. How do I reconcile those two things? And from that point of mental tension comes big emotion-driven behaviors.
Mm. Yeah.
It's people seeking to reconcile dissonance within themselves.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate the insight there that you've offered to us, Sarah. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Speaking with Sarah McCauley about understanding civil disobedience a bit more, she's a licensed associate marriage and family therapist at Clearwater Counseling in Woodbury. And Sarah, I want to follow up now that we've, I won't say that we've diagnosed all the problem, but you know, you've helped us come a long way, I think, in understanding where it comes from. So now let's think about a little bit about what we can do to help either prevent this or to move towards solving the problem, it's a solution towards the problem. So based on your experience as a marriage and family therapist, what exactly do you recommend for families, let's say, to let some of the pressure out of the pressure cooker, so to speak?
Well, you're nailing it on the head. It starts within the family. How do we teach our families a model for our community? What does it mean to hear each other, to engage in dialogue where we can compassionately disagree with someone while still recognizing their humanness and their humanity? It's a really challenging thing, and it's something a lot of families do well and a lot of families struggle with. I believe it's a quote by Dorothy Day. It's been very popular lately of, I only love Christ as much as I love the person, or as much as I care about the person I love the least. So when we find ourselves challenged by someone or struggling with someone, recognizing their behavior and their choices is not their whole self, being the person behind the behavior, to acknowledge that we can hold people accountable, we can challenge people from a place of love, and we can then be challenged from a place of love, recognizing rigidity and defensiveness is very limiting in our growth, not just within the family system, but for the larger systems as well. And to recognize, you know, we're called to honor the humanity of all people. So asking ourselves, you know, starting within, is my behavior reflective of loving the whole person? Or where am I struggling? And really having an examination of our own conscience of how am I aiding problems and how am I stopping problems from, from building? I hope that made sense. It's a bit convoluted because there isn't, you know, there's no magic solution here. We can't hit a button and make it all go away. It starts within.
Amen to that, as do, well, any great redemption, any great reformation from what it starts within us. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me ask you specifically, let's go back to the online stuff, because I got to say that there's a lot of people, a lot of Catholics that I have some deep respect for in general, that every once in a while, I'm just surprised at what they decide to put out there on social media. What can we do when we're about to, you know, because sometimes you just want to respond, or you want to, you know, vent all of your frustration or anger, whatever it may be, by logging onto Facebook or logging onto Twitter and just, you know, unloading, so to speak. What sort of things do we need to consider when we go into that sort of a situation?
That is a fantastic question, and you're naming another big piece of what's become problematic is that sense of immediacy of, you know, immediately putting our opinion out there or immediately challenging someone, and the lack of tone that can be conveyed in that. You know, when we rush through a complex thought, sometimes it may not come out as clearly as we want, or it may come out harsher. So that question of how do I put my thoughts out there in a way that's charitable? How do I challenge people charitably? Is this question, or am I attacking the person, or am I asking for clarification of what they were saying? I think it's also an important reminder of there's a time for a public forum and there's a time for a private conversation.
Yeah, that's right. Right. We tend to take our private conversations into the public forum, and I think we can forget about that sometimes when we're going to vent all of our frustrations over the internet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a time for a megaphone, and there's a time for us to reflect on the quiet, still, small voice within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Well, Sarah, it's been enlightening speaking with you. I'm grateful that you've kind of opened us up a little bit anyway, at least into seeing some further causes of what may be going on, or potential causes anyway, when it comes to civil disobedience. And grateful for your ongoing work with families, with couples there, as you see them out there at Clearwater Counseling. Just wondering here, before we let you go, Sarah, any suggestions for things that Catholics can pray for in terms of stemming the tide of civil disobedience?
Ooh, another great question. And thank you so much for having me on here. What I really encourage people to reflect on in their own prayer life is, how am I trusting my neighbor? Where is pride holding me back? To pray for an increased dialogue and ability to hear each other and really hear each other. And most of all, you know, courage to take action when it is needed to make change in our own life, in our own family.
Wow. That's great. That's fantastic. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us here on Practicing Catholic. We're grateful for your input, and again, for your continued work. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Have a lovely day.
You too. All right, we're going to go into our final break. When we come back, Paul and I, as usual, have all sorts of things that you can do to help increase your faith, to practice the faith.